This is Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna.
And I'm Chris Sidorick. We'll be joined by Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang a little bit later this hour. But first, it's time for our Week in Review. This week, we start with the news that Somerville Mayor Joe Curtatone announced here on WBUR. He plans to open a supervised drug consumption site next year.
We're in the midst of an epidemic, and our goal is to reduce harm and save lives.
Now, Mayor Curtatone is going ahead despite opposition from U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling. Lelling made clear on Radio Boston earlier this year that he will not allow it.
I want everyone to be very clear about this. Not only would it be illegal to open one, but we would pursue enforcement if they did open one.
Despite that, other leaders in the region do support Curtatone, like Cambridge's Mayor Mark McGovern and Boston Mayor Marty Walsh.
We need cities to step up and be willing to lead that charge. They're doing it in Philadelphia, and now they're going to be doing it in Somerville, and I support them.
Safe consumption sites work in Canada. They work in Toronto. They work in Montreal. And what I mean by they work to keep people alive.
A bold proposal, but is it the right one? To answer that, we turn to our Week in Review panelists. CEO of Verdant Medical and former Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson is here. Tito, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for being here.
Also with us is Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute. Jim, welcome to you.
Good to be with you.
And listeners, we want to invite you to the table. What do you make of the announcement that Somerville will be opening a supervised drug consumption site? Would you support one in your city or town or neighborhood? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Councillor Jackson, I want to start with you as a former leader in the city of Boston. What do you make of this?
I want to give kudos and props to Mayor Joe Curtatone. This is leadership. And it's leadership in the face of a lot of death and tragedy. And so it is critical that we have leaders who are willing to use all of their political capital to do what's right. It may not be popular, but this is absolutely what is right. Keeping people alive first, and then dealing with beds on demand, step-down treatment after someone is coming out of a course of treatment. These are the types of things that I believe show Joe Curtatone to be one of the best mayors in the United States of America.
Jim, I want to give you a chance to weigh in here on this. I just want to note at the top, we did speak to your brother George, actually. He's the president of the Worcester Square Area Neighborhood Association about BPD's Operation Clean Sweep in the South End. But what do you make of this idea of supervised consumption sites?
So I'd start by saying my brother mispronounces his last name, but it's because he has a PhD in philosophy, so that's what they do, you know?
We did notice the difference, yeah.
Wow.
No, I'm joking. It may surprise you, but I actually agree with Tito on this in the following sense, maybe not the full sweep of it, but look, there's more and more fentanyl coming into Massachusetts. Federal officials say that it's two, three times more than even a couple of years ago. We're doing stuff, but it's not actually working. Fewer people are dying, but they're kind of being put into a mode of inability to actually function in society. We're seeing a lot of death. What I'd say is this. I think Mayor Curtatone and Carl Shortino, who are leading this effort, one is an elected official, one is putting at risk his federal funding. It's great to see people put themselves out there. They should expect a lot of blowback. What I would say about what they're proposing, I think it's good to try things out, two things. One is they are way overstating the evidence that it works. We've had decades and decades of experience. So it's not just here, Switzerland, across the globe, people have tried this sort of thing. I think the idea that somehow it will not attract addicts is untrue. The idea that it would not attract dealers is untrue. It is it's a solution for a certain subset of the people who are afflicted with addiction, but not for a broader population. And I guess the other thing I'd say is this. If you have isolation effects, that is, if you're the only site within a certain radius, a certain distance, you're going to attract a lot of people. If many, many cities did this sort of thing, it might be different. And it's been different, the experiences in different parts of the world. Vancouver is very different from what's happening in Montreal, for example. So I just wouldn't want to overstate the likelihood this is going to succeed. It is something they'll put themselves at risk of, and there's accountability at the ballot box, and there's accountability with the federal officials.
But Jim, I do want to bring up something about the data, which you mentioned.
Yep.
We spoke with Dr. Laura Laura Keough. She's the medical director of the Substance Use Disorder Bridge Clinic at Mass General. And here's what she said about the data around supervised consumption sites.
The data is clear. These facilities do work, and it's the one enormous gaping hole in our continuum of substance use disorder care. I think a lot of the resistance to this is that so many people just don't understand that these are actually medical facilities. These are very non-judgmental, open access opportunities for people to come who have historically not been welcome in more traditional treatment models.
1-800-423-8255 is the phone number. 1-800-423-TALK. If you want to join this conversation, Counselor Jackson.
I also want to note what doesn't work is the status quo. We can't continue to do exactly what we're doing right now. And I do have to note, as a black man, we did the wrong thing when it came to crack cocaine. These types of services, when most of the people were black and brown, they were not looked at in this way. It was not treated from a public health side of things. And so we should right now seize the day and the opportunity to actually do right. The other component here is that it does allow us to hyper-concentrate public health services into one area. One of the things that people need to think about is when folks are separated from one another, you need someone to be with you to administer Narcan. So you might have it in your pocket, but if you overdose, if you're not with someone, then that means you're going to pass. This has to be a first step, but then coupled with the detox treatments that people need, as well as the housing services that people need after they check out of the detox.
What about the legality issue, though? Because you heard from U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling, who says this is illegal. We will enforce the law.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I take issue with a lot of federal enforcement right now. Leadership is what Joe Curtatone is doing. He is a very popular mayor, and he is actually using his social and political capital to step forward and do what's right for the people in his community. And I would put that out as true and real leadership. The laws are generally lagging indicators as to where we're at. And laws do not save the lives of the people who passed yesterday.
1-800-423-8255 is the phone number. I want to take a call here. Mark is calling from Canton. Mark, what do you think about this?
Hi. I think that this is just a kind of really interesting thing. Canada uses it, obviously. I don't think that's a direct parallel of how it will work in America because we have a different society. However, I think that it is important to kind of highlight the main thing of how it takes people out of that thought that they're so isolated when they're using drugs and addicts. You're not, a lot of the times we kind of demonize people for using drugs and using heroin or et cetera, putting them, saying, oh, you're a bad person because you use drugs, and that just causes them to feel more isolated and return to drugs. And this is kind of a way to open up the conversation, say, hey, you are an addict, but that doesn't make you a bad person. You are a user, but that doesn't make you inherently evil.
Yeah, Mark, it's a great point. We actually spoke earlier, before the Somerville announcement this week, with Boston City Councilor Anissa Asaibi-George. The topic that day was about Operation Clean Sweep, but she's actually visited some of those supervised consumption sites in Canada. Here's what she had to say.
I am on the record opposed to safe consumption or safe injection sites, but I do think they can offer us some insight into helping individuals who are sick, who are dealing with a disease, who are dealing with addiction, find treatment, find recovery. These are our residents. These are our neighbors. These are our friends and our family. This touches everyone. There's very few people it doesn't touch.
So, I mean, that last part I think is really resonant. This does touch so many people in our region, but also across the country. Her main concern with the supervised consumption sites was that it may work to keep these people alive. I don't believe there's ever been an overdose death at one of these sites, but that there was no real road to recovery for these folks. What would you say to that?
Well, I'd say that I agree completely, and this is what I was trying to say before in terms of applauding the mayor and Carl Shortino. Look, this is it's been experimented with around the globe, and it has worked in some places, it's not worked in other places, and it really depends on how you do it, and it really depends when you say, did it work, on what your objectives are.
Right.
So it's not like this is a slam dunk, is going to fix things. This is actually keeping people alive. That's basically what it is. And I think the hope is that it's a gateway to getting them treatment. And so it's worth a try, but I would not try to say that to people, look, this is going to get people back into the workplace. It's going to put everybody back into place. It's all going to be fine. It's not going to be, but it's a good step.
And in terms of this impacting real people in our region, we have Anne calling from Waltham. Anne, what's on your mind?
Hi, I would like to say that my daughter is a heroin addict. She is 4 years clean. She now works at a halfway house. I think that supervised, consumption is the best thing that we could do with the limited resources that we have. It is once it gets approved, if it does, which I hope it does, it's a quick way to get people safer, less overdoses, more supervision, and community, really, of people sharing this pain and hopefully helping each other get out of it.
Anne, thanks so much for that call, and best of luck to you and your daughter. I'm glad to hear that she's 4 years sober.
And Tito Anne, Jackson. Thanks for sharing. I also think city councilors have something that they do on an annual basis, which is they vote on a budget. And so I've always said that a budget is a value statement. Where we put our dollars is connected to the things that we value. So I think it's absolutely critical that our councilors, as well as mayors across the region, put the resources where they need to be. This front step, we also have a very real issue, which is the broader issue of housing. How do we deal with issues of homelessness? And then where do you go? And how do you not go back to the environment that actually got you there, because that becomes a huge issue. And then also the funding relative to public health, because one of the kind of dissociative aspects of this is that we basically only use the police right now and EMS for frontline services. So I believe that there needs to be some subacute services that allow for people to get connected with individuals who are not the police department and who are not the EMS. And this is not villainizing them, but we actually are using kind of blunt instruments for I think something that people need to be very trained in and actually can get them the actual resources that they need, not only the acute resources that they need.
Yeah, you heard that message basically from Commissioner Gross. We don't have the resources to handle this problem, and we're not equipped to do so. I want to get one more caller voice in here, Tori from Canton. Welcome to Radio Boston. Tori, what's on your mind?
Hi. My older brother passed away from a heroin overdose a couple years back. And since then, I feel like if we had had safe consumption sites, maybe he would still be alive. Like, I don't think that these are going to encourage people to use drugs more or anything. I think it's just going to keep people who have a problem alive.
Yeah, Tori, thanks so much for the call. Sorry for your loss, obviously. When we talked about this issue earlier this week, we heard from folks who said, if it helps even one person kind of survive long enough to get into treatment, then it's worth the cost to get there.
And we didn't even talk about the supply of drugs or law enforcement or the president is in New Hampshire talking about this yesterday. But I do want to move on to another topic before we run out of time in this segment, because yesterday on Radio Boston and WBUR, we heard from accounting expert and Wall Street whistleblower Harry Markopoulos. He released a report alleging that GE covered up just how dire its financial problems are by billions of dollars.
GE has no cash. That's why they scaled back their plans. If you'll notice, they're selling their headquarters building. That's how desperate they need cash. Instead of putting in the amount of employees they promised the state, they're putting in only a percentage of those employees. This is a company in dire financial straits.
All right, so not to minimize the importance of this story, but Jamie, I do need to point out you have a financial stake in this one.
I own 3 shares that are worth about
$26. Three. Real high roller. What struck me, hey, we have to be honest.
That's transparency.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Just being honest.
So I think what stuck
after
out
this
to
show,
me.
After this show, 24.
I think what stuck out to me about this story is there's this kind of sense of, man, here we go again, that you have this gigantic corporation cooking the books and basically committing insurance fraud on a massive scale if these allegations are true. Jim, what do you make of the story?
There's so many different things you could take from it. The death knell to the cult of the CEO. That's one. I mean, Jack Welch was the CEO that everyone kind of built this sort of charismatic power, gave him that charismatic power. And Jeff Immalt is the guy who holds the bag. And in part, it's his fault. I mean, there are many things here. The acquisitions that Immalt made were mainly about his ego. If you take a look at the Alstom deal in France, if you take a look at the details in it, there are amazing things.
They're an aluminum company, right?
And the interesting thing about it, Jamie, is this. It's not just he way overpaid and had to take a write-down of $23 billion, but it's also that he agreed to certain things the French government in order to do the deal, because it's all about ego, where, and this is, I don't think, has been reported widely, he agreed that the French government could actually condition GE labor around the world. That's a lot of power to give to a foreign government, right? But there's just deal after deal. The larger thing I'd say about this, besides the CEO stuff and bad deals, is that GE underwent a huge change when it started getting to financials, and that is they moved away from innovation. And what GE was known for decades was they were the guys who brought scientific management to the management of and the discovery of innovation, right? And then they went into commercial lending and credit cards and, you know, long-term insurance and all this sort of stuff. And the CFOs take over in that environment where they're looking at short-term gains. They don't look at the long-term tail of what do you have to pay out afterwards. There's a lot of really bad stuff there, and I think Harry Markopoulos is a big game hunter. He doesn't miss often.
Yeah, and I guess I'm really struck by, for us average folks who are just out there walking around, it feels like there's no way to regulate these kind of companies if they're going to be able to continue to get away with stuff like this. Tito Jackson, what do we need to do to rein in this kind of behavior?
Stop giving them money, right? So, and I'm sitting next to my friend from the Pioneer Institute,
right?
But when it comes down to it, helicopter pad is what GE. Can you imagine right now?
Now you're talking about the incentives that the city and state were offering to lure GE here from their Connecticut headquarters back in 2016.
A day in which GE, go back, if they had a helicopter pad today, and then a MBTA ferry ran ashore on the same day, and then probably a train got messed up. Their sale of their headquarters, they gave the state back a couple of bucks, and then they pocketed all of the rest. And understand, this is a situation in which the state bought a building for them, handed it over, and then allowed them to sell it for a profit. That's very, very problematic. And then when we also look at, this is a company from a corporate social responsibility side, the Housatonic River is still polluted, right? And there's hundreds of millions of dollars.
It's a Superfund site out in Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Exactly, right? So hundreds of millions of dollars. And this is, again, so they got money, even though they owed the state of Massachusetts and the people of Pittsfield money. 800 jobs, I think it was, they were supposed to bring 250 jobs. So this is also a question of what is the role of government relative to large businesses? By the way, I would submit if we're going to give a couple of $100 million to folks, let's do it to startups. These are the people who are most likely to actually provide jobs in the state of Massachusetts and actually bring up our economy versus someone who walked away from a $500 million tax liability in Connecticut and into a $200 million grab here in the state of Massachusetts. I know in new math it might be a little different, but to me that's $700 million for a multi-billion dollar company that's a dinosaur that is about to sadly probably end up how the dinosaurs ended up.
But Jim Sturgis, Pioneer Institute, I want to ask you, do you think we learned any lessons from the perhaps overinflated incentives that the city and state originally offered to GE in how we dealt with Amazon?
So we're talking two different questions here. Let's make sure we keep them distinct. So the question, and I agree with Tito in terms of government giveaways to companies. I mean, my organization's against all of them for the most part, right? So They do not pan out very well. Every so often they do, and everyone stands up and says, look, what we did, we're great job creators. It's much better to have a stable environment where people can invest, and you're actually taking care of homegrown companies as much as possible. About 2%, maximum 2% of all job creation any one year is due to people moving into your state. It's not a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of jobs. But just distinguish that from the $38 billion fraud that's being accused here versus the $700 million. And that's an important issue. It is an important issue,
Tito. $38 billion
with a B. And I guess what I'd say is GE was not the same company as of 2008 already when Warren Buffett and the federal government basically bailed them out. They are not the same company when you think about they changed the way they delivered their financials and their annual report number of times over the past 20 years. That's a sure signal to any investor what the heck is going on here. And what I'd say about it is the final thing I'd say is this. If you look at their annual report, I looked at a whole bunch of them, they started getting fatter and fatter. And what that tells you is they're giving you non-essential information to bury the real stuff. And a lot of private companies will do that, and it's a bad sign. We have it also in public management, too. Public management, private management often are not as different as we like to say. If you take a look at the Board of Education at the state level, sometimes their board packets are 600 pages long. And what you know is they don't want the board to make real decisions. So there's not as much oversight as needed to be at the board level. Shame on those people.
But do you think we need to or have learned a lesson here in Boston from this?
Look, that depends on the elected official. We forget this one every 5 years. Like someone new comes in and says, look, I want a ribbon cutting. This is what we do. I mean, every state does. Let's not blame.
Well, and if this works out, there is the potential for increased jobs and stimulating the economy on some level, right? Let's put the giveaways aside. Let's say GE decides to come here on their own because we've built an infrastructure or an environment that encourages that.
But look at the companies that have come here. Google came here when I first started working for Governor Patrick, so I have to disclose there. I was doing economic development, so we're recruiting companies. They came here with 40 folks, and shout out to my friend Steve Venter, who's over there. There are well over 1,000 folks, and I'm probably lowballing it when it comes down to that. We have an opportunity to look at homegrown companies who are actually blowing up. Look at Wayfair. And so why wouldn't we invest and cultivate that type of homegrown company versus bringing somebody from someplace else and paying them to actually be here? You should want to be here. The colleges and universities, talented folks like you two, half of Tiziana apiece.
All right. All right, that's enough out of CEO of Vernon Medical, former Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson. We're also joined in studio by Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute, Jim Sturgis, here for our week in review. Tito, Jim, stay right where you are for now.
I'm Jamie Bologna.
And he's Chris Sitterick.
And we'll be right back after a short break with Andrew Yang.